Welcome to Vantage Fishing Radio, where we discuss the hot bite and all things fishing, with your hosts, Dustin Clark and Lewis Chapman. Fish on!
Welcome to Vantage Fishing Radio. Lewis Chapman here, Chappie. Dustin's unavailable tonight. He is busy with work and family, so we hope to get him next week. And either way, we got a great show. We got a lot of stuff to talk about, a lot of fishing going on right now in the great state of Colorado. Tons of ice fishing opportunities, still some open water stuff, and we'll briefly cover a little bit of that. But first, just want folks, if you like the show, please like it, comment, share. Show all that love on social media. We definitely want some of the feedback and whatnot. Please interact. Got questions? Send us an email, vantagefishing@gmail.com. Any stuff, like we'd be glad to read your emails on the show for any of your fishing questions or anything you think that we could handle. The show is found on Anchor, and that is the link that we do use, is through anchor.com. It's a podcasting website, and it helps us build the show, and that's the link that we use through our social media and website that most of you listen on. That being said, if you have a favorite streaming app for podcasts, you can find it on all of them. I'm talking Apple Podcasts. We're talking the Google Cast, Spotify, and you name it. I think we're like on 9 different ones, so that's kind of big time. It's nice, and we're starting to see some numbers from folks tuning in from alternate places from Anchor. So it's good that we're getting spread out. So, let's get to it. So we're sitting here mid-December. We're just really starting to get into good ice fishing. We're starting to get a lot of different lakes to cap over and getting, I wouldn't say safe, but being fishable. You should always never assume ice is safe and check with the spud bar and all that if you believe that it could be unsafe. So you never know what conditions can change. We rolled up to North Park in Colorado up by Walden, where we're going to fish the Delaney Buttes. And I figured that would be capped. I've been seeing people fishing up there for the past few weeks. I'm seeing a lot of social media pictures, a lot of big trout being caught. And when we pulled into the lot, surprise, surprise, a third of the lake was open water. And I was actually flabbergasted about that, but there were still people out there fishing. And we found out that just right there by one of the boat ramps, some folks were saying it was only 3-4 inches. And I'm comfortable on 4-3 is kind of pushing it for me. And I kind of prepared a heavy kit knowing a snowstorm was rolling in. So I was a little leery about going out on that kind of ice with the heavier kit. So we broke out the spud bars and had some throw rope, and we cautiously made our way as a group onto the ice. And we went away from the open water, not chancing anything. And we ended up finding 7 or 8 inches away from the open water. So it just shows that conditions, whether that was wind it was keeping it open or some sort of current, not quite sure, but definitely surprised to see that. And it shows that you really never can tell. When I was expecting just to show up at a lake and walk right on the ice and wouldn't have even checked with a spud bar. So it's always good to have that equipment. And you know, with that spud bar, get the big heavy ones. You know, I've got one of the little hammer chisels, you know, that is a nice little tool on the ice, and you can smack the ice and whatnot, but it truly isn't going to be able to blast through thin ice as the spud bar can. And you know, every step, just, you know, every couple steps, just dropping that spud bar as heavy as you can on the ice, and that thing busts through, you're in a little bit of trouble. Sometimes if you're quite unsure, hit it a few times and whatnot, and just be prepared to backtrack a little bit if it does go through. So just keep in mind being safe through all of this. So that being said, we're up at North Delaney having a great weekend. A little snow on the way up, and boy, when we're really starting to get fishing, bam, storm hits us. We get, I don't know, probably like 4 or 5 inches in just a couple hours. A good portion of the time that we were on the lake was a whiteout. So it really made fishing a little bit more tough. And so, you know, I'm one of those guys that loves to not be in a shelter and to be free and light, so I can move around and pop holes and check different depths and see if I can find fish in different areas with different presentations and whatnot, but having that kind of snow and high winds coming in, blowing all that around, low visibility, just downright cold. You didn't want to expose any flesh. And it was just a nasty, nasty weekend. So after about an hour of fishing, you know, enough of this, putting up the shelter, and that kind of anchors you in a lot of times in a storm like that, and you're not as willing to move around and whatnot. And for me, it was the start of a downfall towards a big skunk. And I should have never put up that shelter, and I should have toughed it out and whatnot. Went back to my old army mentality, embrace the suck. But I guess I've gotten a little soft, so I'll have to work on that. Had I been willing to tough it out, I think I would have done a little bit better. My partner in crime, Jason Reed, who's a friend of the show, he's been on a few times. He did well. I mean, he caught a nice big rainbow cutbow, actually, and heck of a fight, heck of a fish. And he caught a couple nice browns too. And the whole time I'm sitting here getting jealous and jealous and jealous, and my attitude's going down the downhill. And I'm just like, oh, this sucks, the weather, da 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 da. And like the only thing that kind of saved it for me is I love grilling on the ice. So in the shelter, I busted out the grill, grilled up, you know, some good sausage and dogs and some bacon wrapped cream cheese jalapenos, and really did it up, and that kind of changed the mood a little bit. But with the conditions they were and just my attitude, I was unwilling to move, and I was even unwilling to help maintain my second line. You know, I just wasn't able to find that motivation to just really fish hard. And for a long drive, that was kind of no excuse. So I you know, had a fish on the jaw jacker. And I heard Jason yelling, fish on, fish on, fish on. And I thought he was talking about one of his another amazing fish that he was catching, and I wasn't. And little did I know, because I was in a shelter and watching my sonar in there, and they're like, oh, Jason's got it. And you know, he's got a buddy next to him that can help him land that fish and whatnot. So I'm going to concentrate on fishing. And little did I know, it was my pole and my jaw jacker going off. And by the time that I realized that, the fish had broken off. So I lost my one chance. I really had messed up and lost just because I was unwilling to poke my head out the shelter and see what was going on. So a huge lesson learned for me on this. And I guess, you know, every once in a while you have to get checked and get that skunk. And, you know, we say fight the skunk. I did a horrible job fighting the skunk. So just some lessons learned. You know, really, if you're active ice fishing and you're moving around and you're working for those fish and you're retying, and that's another thing, retying knots in the snow and the wind. Oh, it's brutal, but you got to do it. And, you know, if you're on a slow bite day, which this was, I mean, there's big fish to be had, but you had to change presentations often, and you had to see how fish were reacting to it. And it's one of those things, every 10 minutes, I should have been changing through my baits. And I was more or less like every half hour I was doing it. And it just wasn't good enough. And the results were I got a skunk. Had I fished like Jason and been hardcore at it, and this dude won the hardcore badge. I mean, he stayed outside all day. He only came in the shelter for like 1 minute to get a hot dog. And he's back outside eating that hot dog while fishing. I mean, at times I was like, dude, come on inside. You're going to freeze out there. And nope, he stayed out there and he kept pulling big fish and big fish. And one of our other buddies that went up there, I won't name him yet because I haven't asked if I can refer to him on the podcast or not, but he pulled in a nice 2-foot cutbow, and again, out there with Jason working hard and stuff like that. So just a little bit of lessons learned. So I don't know. And you know, you need to be prepared to fish in snow like that in inclement weather like that, not only prepared to fish, but prepared to travel on roads. And I know a lot of us travel great distances through the state to go fishing for some of these monster fish at some of our honey holes and canyons and passes and all this. We're going over them no matter what. I mean, I've gone over Berthoud Pass, and then like 10 minutes later, State Patrol's going back up the other side to close it because an avalanche came through on the backside of after me coming through. And so it's one of those things. Make sure you got good tires. Make sure you got snow chains. Make sure you got a snow shovel. You should have a snow shovel out on the ice anyway. And I went up to Delaney and I was unprepared. I did not have a snow shovel. I should have had a snow shovel just to dig myself out, you know, if it comes to it. And I was not prepared. Like I had a mental brain fart before this trip, and I was not mentally ready for this trip. And I knew it was going to be bad weather. It had been blasting all weekend long. And I was not ready as far as equipment too. And that won't happen again this ice season. So I had my letdown. I had my lessons learned, and now I'm going to get back to it. So that being said, when it's snowing like that, and you know there's snow and ice and water getting all over your rods and your gear, your sled's filling up, your shelter. My shelter is going to take like freaking 3 weeks to thaw. It feels like it's still full of ice because it hasn't been above freezing since that day. Tomorrow it's supposed to be getting up there towards the 50 degrees. So I'm going to have to pop it open for a few hours and let it defrost a bit so I can pack it up and have it available for use this weekend. But yeah, I mean, even though I had those brain farts and things didn't go the way that I wanted to go, I still had a great trip and I didn't let my attitude sour it that much. I still had fun. I was still in the outdoors. I was in the Rocky Mountains. I can take a deep breath of clean air and look around at the mountains when it wasn't a whiteout and really just kind of recharge my batteries and take a break after the work week and whatnot. So I still enjoyed that. And I really, really enjoy, even if I don't get the big fish, anybody in my party or anybody I see catching a big fish, that big fish high, and I'll get it along with whoever's catching it. And just to be able to film a couple of these big fish that came up was an honor. And it was great to be part of that moment. And I'm really proud and really happy for those guys that landed those hogs. And so just gives me that little bit of extra go, like, hey, I need to make up for that sour trip I had. Now I got to go twice this weekend and see if I can come in and fight that skunk and maybe land a hog or two. So, yeah, so it was great. And, you know, just on a side note, all the fish that we were caught were released. So we definitely practice catch and release. We want to photograph. So you want to catch, photograph, and release all within 1 minute or so. You want to try hard not to drop a fish. You don't want a fish to sit on the ice for more than a second or two, especially in those free, like, you know, Arctic temperatures. I mean, you got nice days in the ice. We're out there in t-shirts. This was not one of them. So you want to try hard to keep that fish off the ice and whatnot and get them back in the water and healthy and swimming off for you to catch again or for the next angler to catch and really enjoy the day. So, all right. Well, there's segment one. So let's take a quick break and we'll get back with segment two. I want to talk a little bit about electronics. I always want to talk a little bit of gear and a little bit of fishing and whatnot. And I think we might squeeze in a third segment if we have time and whatnot. Maybe talk a little bit about bait fishing through the ice for trout. So we'll be back in just a second. All right, folks, welcome back. So last segment, we're talking about me huddling in a shelter during a big storm up in northern Colorado while we were ice fishing with a group of good friends and how it didn't go so well and whatnot. But sitting there and putting some thought into it and talking a little bit with another buddy of mine kind of hit me with a little bit of an idea that I want to try. I'm going to have to spend a little bit of money, so hopefully I don't get in trouble with the wife. I'll have to clear that for sure. It's all about electronics, you know. And one of the things I was thinking about was how great it would be for me to be able to see what's going on in the hole that I have outside the shelter. So that way I can concentrate on fishing the hole in front of me and doing what I need to do with jigging and changing presentations and watching my main electronics there, you know, how great it would be for me to be able to just maybe look a little bit up in my peripheral and bam, I can see electronics and a sonar reading of my second hole since, you know, second rod stamp. If you're ice fishing, you might as well have your second rod stamp. You should always have a dead stick, right? And one that maybe you're actively working or even two dead sticks, but either way, it's a good idea to be able to see what's going on down that hole without bending over and switching back and forth between the holes and putting a little crank in your neck and whatnot. So I was thinking about that and it hit me because I was using a Deeper, which is a little portable sonar device that transmits via Wi-Fi back to my phone. And I was using my phone as my main unit on there and it works just fine. So battery life is a little bit of an issue at 4 hours, but you know, I charged it up for 20 minutes and I was back in the game for the rest of the day. So not a bad thing. And I took that 20 minutes to grill some food anyway. And so I was like, man, it'd be great if I had a second Deeper and I could throw it in that hole with the jaw jacker And, you know, I won't have to depend on Jason yelling fish on, fish on, fish on, and me thinking he has another fish. And then the whole time there's a fish rodeoing over on my jaw jacker. And I never heard it go off because of the storm and the snow and the wind pounding the shelter. So going back to maybe I should have been outside and been a little bit more tentative of that and whatnot. So, but yeah, it would have been great to have that electronics on there. So I was thinking how I can do that. And I was like, man, I can fish two deepers. I've got an old phone. I just need to get another transducer and maybe some sort of mount that I can put on my sled or put on the side of the shelter or whatnot that holds both phones, and or maybe some sort of tablet and maybe split screen it somehow. So there's definitely some research to go to this. But that way I can see what's really going on, and I can see, you know, how many fish are really approaching this dead stick. Are they just, are they coming at it from the bottom? Are they coming in suspended? Are they just looking at it and rolling, or are they coming back over and over and thinking about it and then rolling out? You know, it might help me to be a little bit more motivated to keep on that dead stick and to keep changing it up until I figure out what the fish really want on that. So it's a bit more active of a dead stick, because I have vision down that hole as well as down the main hole that I'm actively fishing. So, I mean, I don't know. So since I'm thinking, hey, you know, now I need to get another deeper or something similar along those lines. And or even just maybe, because I had sold my Helix 5 to upgrade on the float tube side last spring. So maybe if I pick up another Helix or Garmin or whatever unit, main unit I might pick up, which I haven't decided yet. I was actually kind of hoping to wait another year, because it doesn't look like there's a whole lot of new features from last year to this year and a lot of electronics. So I was hoping to wait a year and pick up my ICE electronics with maybe some new features and some new technology that could help me out. That's not, you know, the super expensive LiveScope and all that stuff. But yeah, you know, deeper, maybe I can find one refurbished or find one on sale or something like that. I have that old phone, and so it could definitely be a good option. So I'm going to be putting a little bit of work into that and figuring it out. So would love to hear what you guys do with this. I mean, are you guys just running one sonar all the time and that's all you do, and you're just leaving that dead stick and just keep kind of keeping a loose eye on it, or waiting for that automatic fisherman or jaw jacker to go off and waiting for that trigger sound? I mean, what do you guys do? What's going on there? Shoot me an email, shoot us a message on Facebook, and let us know what your style is. A few folks that I've fished with lately, man, they're drilling holes right next to each other. Like, I mean, I don't know. Like, to me, like, man, if I get a nice fish on and I lose it because it tangles in my secondary line that I couldn't get up fast enough, that's because it's only like a foot, 2 feet, maybe 3 feet away. I don't know. I would be killing myself if I lost a monster fish over that. And you know, even like if I catch some sort of stalker runt that runs me through it, and then now I got this mess and it takes me out of the game for, you know, 5-10 minutes to fix both my lines and get them back down. I don't know. I don't know if I like that. So, I do like keeping them a decent distance apart. Not so much so that, you know, if I'm jigging some sort of, flashy attractant or vibration type of lure, like a Castmaster or something like that, to attract fish in, I don't want my dead stick with maybe some sort of bait presentation or anything like that to be too far away to where it's ineffective, that the fish don't notice it when they come in. So I try to find that happy medium. So I'm usually maybe 4, 5, 6 feet away. And I've never really encountered any line tangles or anything like that because of that. So, but yeah, so either way, I want to be able to keep a better eye on that hole. And I even thought a little bit about cameras, you know, because I've always wanted one of the AquaViews or one of the Markham cameras. It'd be cool to get the HD and do some recording and do some work with that film and whatnot. But those are expensive. And also, I don't know how the fish are going to react to having that big camera right down next to by my bait down that same hole, and you know, the cabling that would be required to keep an eye on that. I think it'd be a little bit more effective with just a sonar. So, and if you guys haven't looked at a deeper, and I'm by no means sponsored by deeper, but I've been impressed so far this ice season with them. That being said, I haven't encountered yet. I'm worried that when we get thicker ice, because the deeper floats on top and you can't sink it because you need the Wi-Fi to signal to get to your device, that I might start getting echoes when, you know, that ice gets over a foot or two thick. I used it on a foot thick ice once already this year and didn't have problems, but if it gets any thicker than that, I'm wondering if I'm going to, so I'll let you know how that goes. The battery thing, I just bring the cell phone charger out with me with a ruggedized charging device that, charges my phone six times over, and it charges that deeper, like full in 45 minutes. But if I only got a few, hours left in the trip, 20 minutes does the trick and I'm back in business. So I'm wondering if I get two, puts me in the game for two holes. And heck, if you get three, you never have a dead battery because you're rotating one out to always charge. Although that's getting pretty pricey. I don't know. I think, let me look it up. What can I get a deeper Pro Plus for? And so the unit I'm fishing with is the Chirp, which is brand new out this year. And I had to go on a reserve list, and it was for VIPs and whatever. Really, they just did this huge thing to where they got a whole bunch of money before the product was out, and then they shipped it to us versus having to ship have an actual product out and then sell it and ship it. So, but I think that's how that VIP thing went. So looking up Deeper Pro Plus. And I have seen the Pro Plus and the Pro Plus Chirp side by side in action. And the Chirp does provide a little bit more separation, like on what's going on down in the water. If you got a few fish stacked up, you can kind of see a little bit in between them, a little bit more definition on the bottom, but I wouldn't say it was like a huge, huge difference. And if you're looking to run two of them, like I'm talking about here, I don't know if it'd be worth it to have two Chirps. I think maybe just the Pro Plus. So I can get another Pro Plus brand new for, looks like $199 in most places, where the Chirp is going to cost you upwards of $250. So almost $50 more for that Chirp. So yeah, maybe that Pro Plus. So if you think about it, if I got two more Pro Pluses, I'd be in the hole for less than what it costs to get a good Vexilar. And then I would always have battery going, and I would be able to put sonar in both holes that I'm always using. So and if I had a buddy that's new to ice fishing and I wanted to help out and get him going, I have that third deeper that normally is charging. I can drop in a hole, and guess what? My buddy who didn't have sonar now has sonar, and he's got his phone, and he's in business, and probably enjoying his trip a little bit more, and more likely to get a bit more hooked onto ice fishing. By no means trying to rep or push deeper on anything. It's just something that I've come across and enjoy, and I'm just sharing with you guys. I've had Vexilars. I've had Hummingbird Helix 5. I like them all. I love them all. I really loved my Vexilar. The thing was like a tank, but I had the FL12. But the one thing I didn't like is I didn't have a GPS built into it. And I really like that, especially for ice fishing and getting back to those key little honey holes, because there's some fish that are going to be back in that same spot every year, year after year. And it's a pain in the butt drilling here and drilling there because you think you're close, but you're just not finding those fish where you can use that GPS and get right back to them. And it's nice to have it built into your fishing unit so you can mark as you're catching fish, and you can kind of really journal or document what you see and whatnot, versus having to have a handheld GPS or just using the GPS in your phone. The Deeper has got integrated software next to it, so you can journal right with it. The Hummingbird, you can definitely mark your spots and stuff like that. And so if you got crappie on a tree out at Cherry Creek and you're tired of drilling 20 holes to find that tree, that's the way to go. And that's the only reason that I don't fish hardcore with a Vexilar anymore, because I did love it, and it was reliable every single time, and it was accurate and a really good machine. So if they ever find a way to put a small screen on there for GPS or something like that, that would be awesome. But until then, I think I'm going to stay away from Vexilar. So, well, I think I've been droning on a little bit for electronics. I'm sure we'll get back into them more a little bit later in the ice fishing season. So let's take a quick break and let's spend a few minutes talking about bait fishing, and specifically for trout here in the mountains in Colorado. So, and I'm sure these techniques would work anywhere in the country for trout, everywhere I've fished them. It's been the same, whether it's been Iceland or Colorado. So we'll be back in just a second. And welcome Welcome back, folks. Third and final segment today. Just a reminder, if you're enjoying this program, please like and share. Let us help us get out to more anglers. And give us feedback, or if you have any questions for us, send them our way, vantagefishing@gmail.com, or hit us up on our Facebook Messenger. We're pretty good at getting back to folks. So actually, and then you can actually go to our website at vantagefishing, and you can leave comments and stuff there. I think there's a internal email on that. So I'm checking it right now just so I'm not talking untruths to you guys. So at vantagefishing.com. Let's see here. Yep, contact us. And there's a nice little area where you can put your name in, email address, subject, and message. And feel free to throw anything in there, good or bad. You know, tell us what you think. Have questions about fishing. Whatever. If you're bored and you just want to talk to us, shoot us up. Well, don't shoot us up. Hit us up. Well, don't hit us either. Just send us a message. So anyway, let's get back to the subject at hand. And we are going to be talking about a little bit of bait fishing through the ice. So this one can be a bit sensitive for some. I know it kind of gets me going because I feel that I see folks really going about the wrong ways of doing this. And I think there's a little bit of conservation that could be practiced while bait fishing. So, and I'm sure many of you would disagree with me, but it's just my feeling, and I'm the host, and so I guess I'm gonna air it. So I really disagree with bait fishing in general. If you do not plan on keeping the fish, if you're like your whole idea is you're gonna go out and catch and release that day, like say you're targeting trophies on some gold medal water, or you're just in, you know, favorite lake that you just wanna, you know, release those fish so they keep getting bigger and whatnot, but your way is to use night crawlers or to use a wax worm or maybe power bait or a fireball or something like that. Any bait, anything kind of more or less scented that's fairly small and you're not actively fishing and you're just kind of letting sit on a dead stick. And, you know, ice fishing, there's a lot of that. You know, it's almost everybody has a dead stick going on with something scented, unless you're at a flies and lures only lake that doesn't allow scented, then you're just putting something down with a hope and a prayer that's shiny enough or looks good enough that the fish will hit it. But a lot of times in ice fishing, it takes that scent, you know, the scent of a, you know, that millworm torn in half and a little piece of them put on the hook or a wax worm or something like that. And so where I have my beef with it is a lot of times those rods aren't actively being fished. So there's nobody there to set the hook, or you're more than an arm length away and it's going to take you a second or two to grab that rod. And in that time, that fish has found something that feels like food, tastes like food, and it's going to swallow. And so by the time you set the hook, that hook is down the gullet and it's somewhere back behind the gills getting ready to go in the stomach. And you set the hook in an area that's downright difficult and most likely going to kill, especially a trout, to remove. And so that's why I think that, you know, when you bait fish, you should be willing to keep that fish because most likely it is not going to survive after squeezing and digging out whatever hook or jig that you had down there that had the bait on it. I mean, that fish just doesn't have a very good chance. Trout are really fragile and yeah, they may take a minute to revive and then all of a sudden they'll dart off or slowly swim off. Chances are that fish is going to go belly up and be crawdad food. I mean, I don't think the fish is going to go to waste, but I mean, you could have kept it and took it home for dinner or you could have fished in a different manner that wouldn't have happened. And you could have released it like you wanted to. And that way it's, you know, there for somebody else to enjoy catching and, or there for the ecosystem. So I'll never tell a person what they can or cannot do with a fish. I mean, if you legally keep that fish, if you legally catch that fish and you want to keep it as long as it's within regs, I mean, by all means, keep it. I mean, there's sometimes I shake my head at it, but it's yours to keep and I won't argue that point. But I just ask to use a little common sense in it, you know. So if you are using some bait, and I'll get into one of my favorite bait rigs that I've been using this year, and it's worked out well for me. So it's not that I don't bait fish. I do. I just am very selective of how I do it. But you know, make sure that you're willing to keep the fish or use other techniques. And There are some things you can do where you can still bait fish, and most likely, you know, chances, the odds are you're not going to gut hook it. And that's using a jaw jacker or an automatic fisherman or one of the homemade devices that I see folks with. I love jaw jackers. I use them all the time. I usually have a jaw jacker set up in my dead stick while I'm actively working another hole. And that jaw jacker, you know, you can set it up with, you can adjust the sensitivity of the bite. So if it's a really light bite, you can set it to where it's going to trip really easy. Or if you want it to where the fish needs to really kind of grab it and pull, it'll trip in that way and hook the fish. But even like with a tougher setting, it does still trip fairly easy. It's really good. And you're adjusting it just a little bit tighter. So like a fish that's good at stealing, trout are famous for it. Don't just, you know, come up, steal that worm off and roll out because, you know, it just barely grabbed it and it didn't have enough sensitivity to trip the jaw jacker. So you can loosen it down for that reason. But the great thing about a jaw jacker is I don't think I've ever gut hooked a fish with it. I could be wrong, but going off of memory, I can't remember a time where I've gut hooked a fish or I haven't caught a fish on the jaw jacker that I haven't been able to return to the water. And so when that fish hits, it's so quick on the release and that rod snapping up, it automatically sets that hook. Most of my jaw jacker hook sets are right there in that top lip. And I mean, it's like the perfect spot and it's great because that way the line's not going over teeth or anything like that. And I have a pretty good catch rate. So, you know, the success of the jaw jacker comes with using the right rods and having them adjusted to the right settings and using good sharp hooks. You know, if your jaw jacker is going off and you're missing it, which happened to me earlier in the year, I was using rods that probably didn't have the strength in their backbone to have a good snap. So I wasn't getting that. My hooks probably weren't sharp enough and I might've had the settings adjusted, too tight because the trip before I was using it was in high winds and they kept going off from the wind. So I adjusted it to where it was a little bit tighter so it wouldn't go off so easy. And so I think I was missing fish with that. So it's all about fine tuning them. But that being said, I don't ever remember gut hooking fish. So if you really do enjoy fishing with bait and you really do want to catch and release, or maybe you're just looking for a certain size of keeper or something like that, you know, is going to make a great meal. You can let the other ones go safely and they haven't been gut hooked and you're not putting a fish back in that's most likely going to die. Now, other fish might be able to put up a little bit more like walleye or bass or whatnot. But either way, I know like if you get gut hooked, you have to go to the emergency room. The fish don't have an emergency room. You're just letting them go. And, you know, if we were to gut hook you and release you back into your house or work or whatever, you're going to have a tough time of it with that hook in your gullet. So just keep that in mind. And it's not fair to the fish and it's not fair to the sport. And plus we want to take care of the fish that do get released. So that way they can be enjoyed by others and be part of the ecosystem, whether it's the birds getting them or them growing up big to make more fish for us to catch. So just my two cents on bait fishing on that. So I did promise I'd talk about one of the rigs that I like. So give me one second here. So I generally just ice fish with a light, sometimes tungsten or just regular lead small jig. They've got all sorts of different jigs and stuff like that. So, and there's the fish will hit like most of them. Sometimes you have to just keep figuring out what colors they're going to want or change different bait presentations on it. But I kind of keep it small, almost small, like a fly, especially as winter gets more advanced into January and February and until we start getting to March, sometimes that bite gets so tough and you just have to be so tiny, that I'm getting down to jigs as small as flies and, whatnot. And I'm just making sure that as I'm talking to you, I'm looking up the bait that I use, making sure I get the name right on it. So give me one second. I'm trying to talk and type at the same time and it's not going so well. All right, it is pulling up. So over the last few years, and I learned this one from Mr. Ford up there at Alpine Fishing Adventures. So a big thanks to him. Definitely worked great on Dylan, and I've used him on many other waters that allow bait. As I like the Atlas Mike's shrimp eggs, and I like using either the pink or the red, but they come in yellow and they come in white and all that. And they're essentially salmon eggs that have got a shrimp flavor and smell to them. And boy, do they work well with the trout, and, you know, up at Dylan, they work great on the char and salmon too. And just putting one egg, and I'll slide it, you know, down the hook and up the body of the jig just a little bit, so it's not as easy to steal. And that way the fish actually has to at least lip the hook to set off the jaw jacker. And so that combined with the jaw jacker, and I usually use a pretty light line, like 4 pound test when I'm doing this, just because it's hanging vertically and it's not moving around. So generally fish aren't like in a frenzy swimming around trying to catch something that's jigging. They're actually coming up, smelling it, inspecting it, and then deciding to try to nibble or take. And so I think a lot of times on a dead stick, which is that vertical presentation, and they're not concentrating on a moving target, they're more apt to see the line. Just my belief. So that's why I like using a 4 pound test. And I'll like on almost all my ice rods, I've got about either 10 or 12 pound test braid, and then I'll tie off on a fluorocarbon leader, you know, maybe 2 to 3 feet below. And that's what I'm using. And it works pretty well as long as you have your jaw jacker settings right and you're using a good medium ice rod that is going to have a good snap with the jaw jacker or the good hook set motion. So, you know, if you're using a medium light or an ultra light, probably not the best for a jaw jacker. So, all right, folks. Well, I think we're going to wrap it up for tonight. I'll check the show notes real quick, make sure I'm not missing anything. Nope. So, overall, you know, we went over my mental hiccups towards this last trip and how not being prepared and not being willing to battle the elements cost me big fish. And I won't let that happen again. And we talked about that. And so we talked about 2 transducers, you know, having sonar in each of your holes for your dead stick and your active one. So you always know what's going on and setting up screens for that using deepers. And I'm sure there's other ways to do that. Something I'm going to look into, and I've never come across anybody doing something like that. So I'll let you know how it goes as I get more into that. So, and then the last segment, we just got into bait fishing for trout through the ice and a little bit of the conservation that goes into that and just my opinion on that. And I'll never tell anybody what they can do with a legally caught fish. If they want to keep it by regs, by all means. So, all right. Well, that's all we have for this episode. Next episode, I'm sure we'll be going over a little bit of what happens this next upcoming weekend, and we'll get into some more gear and some more tactics. If you've enjoyed or found value in our show, please like and share, get it out there. You know, it can be found in all sorts of different formats, from the Apple or iTunes, which I think has a new name yet. I'm not an Apple fan, so I'm not sure. I just heard that. And then Google Cast, which is Google Podcasting, and all sorts of different things can be found on anchor.com. And as always, you can get it through our Facebook page, Twitter, as well as our website at vantagefishing.com. Plenty of great ice fishing blogs. I've been a little bit off of blog writing for the last few months. It's really a feeling thing. And man, I just haven't been able to write. I'm hoping I get back into it and get a little bit of that juices flowing again to start writing again. But that being said, there's a lot of great content on ice fishing that myself and a few of our other great blog writers have put in there. So if you're looking to learn a little bit more about ice fishing in Colorado or even in general, please thumb through those blogs. And as always, fight the skunk.